Alright, everybody, welcome back to episode 4 of Warmans. I'm Bill. I play Rhett and Cock.
What's up, guys? And with us, very, very special guest. You may know him as JVM from the Legion Forums. Our very own, Michigan's best, Jake Van Meter.
What's up, guys? This is Jake Van Meter. I play Legion.
That's good.
Actually, this is the internet's greatest troll, Danny Goodner, and he's a super sweet guy, and you should still listen, even though your hopes and dreams have been crushed by that introduction.
Your Danny's hearts are legit. All broken, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some mercs, and that's why we brought Danny on today, because me and Bill are merc experts, and we need somebody, some fucking noob, to to tell. I can't even say it.
well, I'm sorry to be mildly disappointing. So I am Danny Goodner. I play mercs. I've been playing mercs this year. I played Krix for 8 years, and I gave up on that. It was kind of stagnant and boring. There's only so many things you can charge with Bane Thralls. So yeah,
got tired of smashing everybody's faces.
Yeah, I got tired of winning. I just gave up.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You got Fair tired enough. Of those range 12 pistol wraiths? Is that what you got tired of?
Hey, range 12 pistol wraiths are a thing.
Yeah, somewhere.
All right, well, before we get too deep, just quick table of contents. We're going to talk about some Merc BFFs, as you probably have come to expect. Danny's going to give us some Terran tech, because he's got some experience playing her before it was cool. And then we're gonna break away from what we talked about last week with the Brick, go a little opposite, and talk about beating Infantry Machine. And then if we have some time, we'll talk about some things we're working on.
Sounds good to me. I want to let everybody know, you know, everybody at home listening to the podcast, that I am in august company today because I have the internet's greatest troll and I have real life's greatest troll on this podcast with me today. I have a man I have to moderate in real life, Bill, constantly. And then I have a guy I have to moderate on the internet. His name is Danny Goodner. You might have seen him on the Muse forums. You might have seen his posts.
Sure.
Yeah, you might have seen his posts about 30 seconds before I deleted them.
My posts are almost always very serious.
So good. They're so good. So anyway, Danny, why don't you school us on some mercs?
I have a couple of tech things that more experienced mercenary players might know. But newer mercenary players may not have tried yet.
Cool. Well, I think that's relevant to not just merc players' interests, but some of these are going to be combinations that maybe could work in non-merc lists. Is that correct? Or are we talking more like caster synergies with...
One of them is a caster synergy, but it's pretty intense on what the unit is that's going with the caster, and the unit is just bonkers good regardless. Gotcha. So that will lapse over to other factions. Mm-hmm. But one of them is going to be specific to mercenaries because it's going to involve marshalling jacks.
I see. Okay. Well, cool. We'll dive right in, man. I'm intrigued.
Okay. Well, let's the first one, and my more exciting one, in my opinion, is the Tactical Arcanist Corps with Durgan.
Best friends forever!
So what Durgan does for them is his feat works on them, but only for the damage roll. Durgan's feat says you get an additional die on ranged attack AoEs and AoE damage blast damage roll. So you don't get it on the attack roll because it's a magic attack, not a ranged attack, but you do get it on the damage roll because it's an AoE blast damage roll.
Oh, I
so
see.
So you get okay. Power 7, 3 dice blast. That's about all he does for them, but what they do for Durgan the other way is something kind of silly. It's a little more in-depth, but when you take them with Durgan, obviously they can make him a cloud wall. He doesn't like being shot, but his gun is only range 12 and you want to fire it every turn, so making a cloud wall is very good. They can get really close to Durgan, maybe within half an inch, or target Dougal if you put Dougal next to him, and I'll explain what the difference is. But you can target each model can target a different model in the unit, or all three of them can target Dougal. And Durgan has an ability called Blast Armor, which says if he would take blast damage roll, instead of taking the damage roll, he gains a focus.
Mm.
That means you have three AoEs coming out of these guys. They do not do damage to each other because they are fire type damage rolls. And they will not damage Durgan because instead of damaging Durgan, they give him a focus.
So what if, sorry to interrupt you, Danny, but what if you crit hit one of your own guys? Are you setting Durgan on fire?
Yes.
Okay. So that's like the one downfall.
That's the difference. I'll talk about that in a second. But starting on turn one, you probably won't do that. But on turn two and following, getting a free and hospitable ground against Minoth is really, really good.
Yeah.
Going up, spending all six of your focus, maybe you're allocating, you're upkeeping primed and redline. Maybe you're boosting to hit, boosting damage twice, and that would cost four focus to do that, and you'd still be upkeeping your spells. There's several different things you could be doing with your focus, but Durgan's armor is 17. 17 is very killable. 20 is substantially less killable. So if Dougal has hit the deck says that he cannot be hit by ranged attacks if he would – or AoE attacks rather. Sorry, not ranged attacks. AoE attacks. If he would be hit by AoE attacks, he is knocked down instead. And while he is knocked down, he cannot be targeted by ranged attacks. So what you can do is put him – most of the time he will be base-to-base with Durgan. He'll use Artillerist, and then after you've used Artillerist, you'll walk your tactical behind Dougal and shoot him three times. Because he cannot be hit, effects that revolve around hitting like do crit, not occur.
So the crit fire can't happen then.
Because you can't hit, you cannot critically hit.
Correct.
So that's really, do you want Dougal to move? Or if you're playing the Pirates with him, Bosun can give him steady, and then you can do that and then move him out of the way. It's just a way to get around the crit fire, but it allows you to play Durgan at 9 focus.
Man, Durgan's sweet. I want to play some Durgan.
Yeah, Durgan is definitely very good. And Tactical Arcanist Core, I think, put him over the top. I played him before. I honestly believe that he is better than Bart for the Crix matchup, and that's why I play him.
Nice. Seems all right. So the BFFs we're talking about today are
specifically
Durgan
BFFs
and Danny Goodner.
So how does Fiona the Black fit into all of this?
Mercs. So to piggyback a little bit on the Tactical Arcanist Core stuff just for a second, I don't want to say – I don't know if I would call this a BFF yet because I have not played it. But I am really geeked about trying those guys with Nemo 1 because they fixed two of his problems for 4 points. And it's hard to jam a bunch of spellcasters in to guarantee yourself that maximum 3 focus every turn that you want when you're playing Nemo. And then to have 3 little dudes who create a pretty nice defensive mechanism for him. And the fact that they're slowed kind of doesn't matter because he doesn't really want to get up the field that quick. To have that all together and have it be spellcasting for 4 points is really solid. There's no other combination of models for 4 points that fill that role perfectly for him as they do. So, and that's not new stuff. I think as soon as they got spoiled, people were like, Ermagerd, Nemo 1. But I am going to try it, and I'll come back with some. So, and then you had another BFF you wanted to talk about.
I do have another one. Like I said, playing Crix, I never got to use guns. Yep. And I found that playing gun mages is actually very effective. As it turns yeah. out, gun mages are good.
You don't
news
say.
Flash from Warmans.
We are bringing Warmans is on top of it.
Yeah,
we got it.
We got it. News at 11.
So my best friend for gun mages, and this is strictly in mercenaries in the Highborn Covenant, is a buccaneer. He's a 3-point warjack. He has a decent stat line. He is rat 5. He's speed 6. And he's a 13-15, and he's got a decent amount of boxes. It's definitely going to take more than 3 points to kill him, so that's always a good thing. And he has a range 8 gun that has no effect other than knockdown. Well, marshaling him on the dude.
That's all you need.
Marshaling him on the dude, that goes to range 12 if you're using snipe, and you can boost the rat 5 with the marshal, and if you're doing that, say you have Durgan or you have Galleon or you have something like that and you're going up against a Stalker. Stalkers are defense 14, and that's not like you need 6s to hit, or with Galleon you're going to need 7s to hit, assuming you have Artillerist on him on both of those situations. Well, if you use your Buccaneer first and you boost your hit roll and you knock it down, then you just don't care. So it's very good just for the knockdown gun. Range 12 boosted knockdown gun. Very good. It gives a couple other things though. It gives the ability, like I said, he's armor 15 and he's got a pretty full grid, which means you spend 3 points on him, put him in a zone, force your opponent to spend 8 or 9 points in one turn to kill him, or 2 Bane Thralls, whichever. and he also – so he gives something for an attrition matchup. And he also has reach and a power 10 melee. Not amazing, but with gun mages, one thing I found is they don't contest zones. They just don't. They don't want to get near a zone.
Yeah, I mean
they want to stay as far away from your opponent as possible. And one thing that really sucks with them is pirates or something like Satixus Raiders, something advanced deploy or extremely fast infantry model, just foregoing their attack to engage them, and then they just sit there and do nothing the rest of the game. Well, having a medium-based reached model to sit in front of them, that's fairly hardy, not extremely, but it's what you can expect for 3 points. Yep. He has reach, mat 6, so mat 8 on the free strike. You put him a couple inches in front of your gun mages, and you have a little bubble there where your opponent cannot run directly at your gun mages. They have to run around, and simply having to run around to avoid the free strike a lot of times will stop them from engaging.
That's good tech.
Yeah, I like it.
I'd like to say just in general as like a blanket statement about 3-point warjacks is – there's no such thing as a bad 3-point warjack, in my opinion. It's kind of like the lesser war beasts. You start really looking at their health, their hitboxes, and you look at their the fact that they can boost, and they pretty much outperform almost everything else in the game. You know, single models that you can buy for 3 points. So the Buccaneer, especially a knockdown gun for 3 points.
Yeah,
I'm super boostable knockdown. Super gun. Super in on that. Just 3 points for knockdown is boostable knockdown guns for 3 points. I mean, I don't know. I'll say that repeatedly because it's kind of baffling because, you know, you look at – there's other jacks in the game. You know, the Convergence has the new one that has a little earthquake gun.
Yep.
What is that guy 4 points?
I'm not sure if he's 3 or 4 off the top of my head.
I think he might be 4. And then Signar has the arguably overpriced Avenger. That's Rat 4. You know, and then – there's a 3-point option out there that does the knockdown. Obviously, the Avenger does more than that, but I love that. It's everything you need and nothing you don't want, so it costs 3.
Right.
They could have tacked a bunch of extra shit onto that jack and made it like 4 or 5 points, but instead it's just like, it's just a knockdown gun. You don't need to cause damage. Just knockdown.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. Just having reach so it protects your dudes.
Yeah.
Being requiring more than 3 points to kill it, which is great for the attrition. Anytime you can force your opponent to spend more points to kill something than you paid to put it in your list, it's good for attrition.
There's a lot of Merc Light Jacks that are like that. I mean, the Vanguard obviously is incredibly difficult to kill for how much it costs.
Oh, man. That thing is so ridiculous.
Even the 4-point Talon, doesn't that thing have a shield? Isn't it like armor 18?
Yeah, it – okay, here's my – Crix sucks. I feel bad for Crix players because most of their models are just subpar.
Yeah.
And here's my proof. The Talon is a 4-point warjack. He has reach. He has a shield. He has stall. And he has armor 18 because of his shield. And he's only 2 boxes short of being a Crix Slayer chassis. And so he has 1 better armor. He has the same speed. And he's 2 points less.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really feel bad for the Crix players out there. Well, because that's just unfair.
We all feel bad for them sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we got a little off track there. Let's do
two
net men with fucking gun mages. Damn, that bubble in front is hot shit.
Yeah, that's good tech, I like man. That.
I didn't include this in my best friends list, but I have played a couple games with Gaston. And I would like to just touch on him and his best friend really quick.
Sure.
As you said when you did the novice review, Gaston is the best. You just couldn't defend it because you're retarded. Now, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. You're absolutely correct on both of those things.
Look,
you are retarded. And
look,
and he
intuition.
Is the best.
It's intuition, all right? I don't need to explain it. I just knew.
Well, just... you're right. So feel happy about that.
Thank you, I think.
But... I have played him obviously 4-point Vanguards. That's amazing. Vanguards are base 5 points. They are defense 13. They have set defense. They are armor 17. They have a shield, so they're armor 19. They are ridiculously hard to kill, and getting them for 4 points is simply unfair.
I am super geeked about being able to put those in Signar lists, and I'm sure maybe even Menoth players might occasionally run them with Gaston.
Oh, yeah. No, having an armor 19 shield guard that has as many boxes as he has is ridiculous. And I would suggest to anybody looking for a way, anyone that can take Gaston looking for a way to make their caster a little bit more survivable, especially with the errata to Terran, dropping your Colossal or your Battle Engine out of the way, is take Gaston, put a Vanguard on him, and put him in your list. 7 points, you've got a great shield guard, and you've got a really, really good super solo.
Yeah, I mean, Gaston, even if the Vanguard doesn't do much work for most of the game, Gaston can probably earn 7 points worth of kills with his gun. And
no, give out some gypsy kisses. Fuck it.
Yeah, man. Just
no kidding.
Kiss you, kiss you. Next, back up. Next turn, kiss you, back up. I mean,
so as far as his best friends go, obviously the Vanguard's there. He has the scavenge ability for Vanguards. But since we're talking about Buccaneers, I have played him with double Buccaneer, and it's extremely effective.
I might like one of each in his battle group, honestly.
I haven't played it yet. I've played with one Vanguard, two Vanguards, and two Buccaneers. My next mission will probably be to play with a Mule. I think a Mule could be very good with him.
Yeah, that's the first thing that jumped out at me was the Mule. I agree. I thought the Mule would be really good with him.
I think we're missing the obvious synergy with the Nacrium brand.
Fiona's
so great. Look at that ponytail. Really like just look at it.
So, Danny, I know we want to talk about Taryn, and I want to talk about her in the context of a Kane list that I'm going to be running next month.
Big shocker. We're going to talk Signar. Weird.
Yeah, right. But before that happens, Danny wanted to mention one more thing about Gaston, which I'm enjoying quite a bit as far as some of the ideas using the Merc Jacks with him. So what else you got for us?
Just one thing. I've seen a lot of talk on the forums and just around on Facebook, people talking at local stores about how you can take Galleon and Signar and how you can take a Vanguard with Menoth. And that's great, but let's be straight. He's a mercenary model. How can you use him in mercenaries? And he has some of the best abilities of any solo in mercenaries. And most of this will be theory machine. I haven't put it on the table. But the numbers are just phenomenal. He has flank with a warjack, I believe it is, and he has a decent mat and a pretty low POW as far as POW goes. But he is a mat 6 POW 10, I believe, or POW 8 with flank. He goes to a mat 8 POW 8 with weapon master because of flank. Now that's not phenomenal, but he has 4 focus and 2 initials. So that's 6 mat 8 POW 8 weapon masters. And any way you can get that a little bit higher will be worth committing him to melee and possibly losing him. So I've thought about it, and one thing that I found interesting is that he can work for the Talion Charter, and that's where you get to take the pirates. The only place Shay can work, not in a theme force, is in the Talion Charter. So if you take outside of his theme force, which most people would tell you to stop listening to me right now, taking Shay outside of his theme force.
Yeah.
If you do take him out of his theme force, you get 2 things in your list. You can have Gaston, which I'll touch on, but you also get to take Galleon with Dougal, which gives you a solid range threat, but you also get Gaston. Gaston possibly running a Vanguard or something to that effect. But if you put Storm Rager on him and give him +2, +2, and then can't be targeted by combines, but the +2, +2 is really the more important part. He goes from a mat 8 to a mat 10, and from a power, I believe it's an 8, to a power 10, you have a mat 10, power 10 weapon master that gets 6 attacks.
So he's base mat 5, so he would go
He's 6-5.
Nope, he's mat 5, rat 5, I got it in front of me. Mat 5, rat 5, 2 POW 8, so he would go to Mat 9.
Mat 9, POW 10.
POW 12 because 10 from flank and then 12 to, from Storm Raider.
No. Flank is Weapon Master, not plus 2.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So you with Storm Raider on him, you have a Mat 9, POW 10 Weapon Master that gets 6 attacks. Or he can boost his – he can charge in, then his secondary attack he can boost, then he can buy and boost another attack. So okay. He gets 3 Mat 9, POW 10, 4 dice damage.
All right, so – I'm going to talk about my Kane list because Signar, Signar, Signar.
Kill me.
This is my favorite part, is making Bill just mentally shut down when I started talking about Signar. Basically, when I saw the Terran change, and we talked about this a little bit the week it happened. I think it was episode 1 or 2 that we talked about it. Probably episode 2, I think. What excites me, I immediately thought of P. Kane, because P. Kane is every Merc's like best friend anyway. He's got Deadeye, and he's got Snipe. I'm a big fan of both of those. I'm also just a big fan of P. Kane's personal assassination. And a lot of times, you know, he's overlooked because Epic Kane is better at it. I mean, I won't make that argument that he's not as good. Or Kane 1 is better than Kane 2 at killing casters. What I like about Kane 1, though, is he can snipe himself as well. He's got Rate of Fire 4, you know, 2 on each gun. It's pretty damn solid. So I'm pretty excited about just having the option to have Terran make a Jack or a Colossal invisible. I love Stormblades with P. Kane. I love the idea of having an 18-inch assault that between Deadeye and then the 3 Storm Gunners, probably one or my first or second Storm Gunner is going to hit your caster, and then the entire unit auto-hits all at POW 14. And a bunch of unboosted POW 14s will kill a lot of casters. What I especially like about it is it'll kill a lot of Hordes casters. Hordes casters hate volume of reasonably high POW attacks.
That is one thing that I think you will prove true after you start playing it. I noticed that playing Pirates in Prigs or in Mercenaries, when you can knock down a Warlock or reasonably hit it, obviously, you have your way through Deadeye and auto-hitting, but yeah. When you can reasonably hit a Warlock and then dump like 10 or 15 shots into it at POW 12, POW 14, POW 15, something like that,
yeah,
you start eating through transfers extremely quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Even the typical, like, I'm camping 2 or 3, a lot of Warlocks are in that arm 14 to 16 range, and man, they get effed up by a bunch of POW 14s from Stormblades. And then Kane, of course, throws in, you know, his 4 shots. So that's 4 boosted POW 12s, potentially, depending on what he has to upkeep and what he has to cast during that turn. I mean, it is damn good. Not to mention, of course, the Terran in that list, and I'm going to read the list for a second here, but Terran in that list adds an additional element of assassination to a list that already does attrition really well against infantry. So I feel like as long as I'm not putting it down against like an armor brick, I've got tons of options. So even if the attrition doesn't go well somehow, between Thunderstrike, Terran, I've got built-in Electro Leaps. I got a bunch of stuff in this list that can really get casters. So the list is Kane 1. The battle group is Silas Wishnailer and Centurion, and that's mostly just to stick Centurion in a zone so I don't lose on scenario.
Absolutely.
And, you know, pretty typical P. Kane edition, I feel like, for a lot of lists. I'm running the Battle Engine, which I think synergizes fairly well with Kane. It's a good snipe target, and it's another way of getting indirect hits on casters. Also, if your caster's knocked down, it's a range – I think it's range 14. Range 14, POW 15, take 2 of those.
Yeah.
Also really good at just murdering backline support in general.
And that's one thing, getting indirect hits on casters that I found playing Fiona, when you can swap Brand around and you have like Kayazi that can run through models, and you have a Warjack, and you have a unit. You have 3 different things that can get to their caster. Not even attacking their caster, just the threat of having something that can attack their caster will make a lot of people play much more defensively, and dictating the pace of the game that way through Terran and having the assault shots and having Kane's Rate of Fire 4 and having the Battle Engine, you can just simply dictate the pace of the game through that.
I feel like there's a fork in the road. It's either they're going to see what the list does and they're going to do what you just said, which is their caster's going to play way the hell back. Or, you know, camp a ton of focus or whatever, camp a ton of fury. Or they're not going to see it. Or they're going to miss one of these myriad angles I have, and then I'm going to get them. Or I have the option to go get them, you know? And I like that a lot. But
Always putting pressure on. Even if, let's say, one turn you feel you're ahead on attrition, which with Kane is very likely, you say, well, I can go spend the rest of my turn getting from being 10 points ahead to 15 points ahead, or I can force 10 damage onto their Warcaster. Sometimes forcing that 10 damage onto their Warcaster where you know it's not going to kill them, but then they freak out, is just – it's just worth it because maybe they'll make a mistake. Maybe they'll run away. Maybe they're going to spend all their focus to heal. They're going to allocate more models to blocking line of sight to their caster.
Yep.
Or they're going to back out of scenario zones. Any of those things happening – just by scaring your opponent through putting some damage on a Warcaster, even if you don't kill it, is very valuable.
Yeah, and that's – we've just now entered Bill's wheelhouse.
What do you mean?
I'm going to put early damage on you because all I want to do is kill your caster. Like, you were really – like, Bill will take sort of low percentage assassination sort of swipes at you that may not connect, but then you're playing with – you know, a caster with four health on it, and that completely changes the way you play the rest of the game. You know, against Hordes, it's maybe a different story because of the way the transfer mechanic works. But against War Machine, it's a good play to put early damage on casters.
Oh yeah, especially like against a faction like Krix, where you're wanting to cast Excarnate or Crippling Grasp or Dark Guidance or certain spells like that are high focus. Spells on low focus casters, like focus 6, focus 7 casters. It's like, well, Scar just used her feet and now she's down to 11 hitboxes.
Yep.
And do you really want to cast that spell because I put 6 damage on you and you've only got 5 hitboxes instead of the 11 you thought you were going to have?
Yeah, I mean, every time Scar feats for less than 5, an angel gets its wings, right? Isn't that how the saying goes?
Exactly.
You put early damage on her, so she's like, shit, I'm only going to feat for 2 or something like that, you know? But anyway, let me zing through the rest of the list here and you guys can tell me what you think. So battle group with Silas and Centurion, Stormstriders in there, Journeyman running a Hunter for a little bit of armor, you know, a little armor cracking, a Reinhold because 5 shots is better than 4, Terran, of course, as we mentioned, the full Stormblade boat, a Black 13th because I like killing things with stealth, an Ion and Holt for some more armor cracking, and a unit of Rangers because I feel like all my Kane lists pretty much start with Ion and Holt, Rangers, and Black 13th because they cover like 3 weaknesses of Kane, and then that lets Kane do all his work on his own, and then I can just put kind of whatever in there. But that's where I'm at so far, and I feel like it's a really solid list against most, I would say against most of War Machine, I'm pretty comfortable dropping that because, and one of the things that makes it so comfortable is because now I have that threat of assassination, a better threat of assassination than I had before because of Terran and some of those other elements like we talked about. So
how do you, if you're using Centurion to hold a contesting zone, for example, how do you kill a heavy warjack that's threatening your army? What in the list kills heavy warjacks that is not the Centurion?
Stormblades will kill a heavy pretty dead.
Okay.
Typically.
Is that going to be your more than likely Arcane Shield target?
It depends on the other list. If they don't have a lot of infantry sweeping, I will probably put Arcane Shield on the Centurion and go polarity field it into a zone or whatever, you know, in front of my guns, whatever, you know, whatever the case may be.
Sure.
Maybe put Blur on the Stormblades.
How much is that Stormblade plan reliant on Ayana and Holt?
Cracking armor?
Yeah.
Not very reliant, to be honest with you. As long as I've got 4 or 5 of them left, they can kill most heavies. I mean, they're POW 15 charges. You know, the main thing that they lack against heavies is their charge threat is only 8.5. Their assault threat is way longer than that, and the assault can actually kill... I mean, you can kill a Warpulse Stalker with that unit just in assaults.
Sure. So have you considered possibly doing something like Snipe Kane, Reload Kane, obviously, but then do three shots into the stalker unboosted, but boosting damage when you hit, teleport away, and then your guys can assault in, and that'll kill the stalker almost guaranteed because you've already put three boosted power 12 damage rolls into him.
Yeah, Kane will soften stuff up, or he'll Thunderstrike it and get it out of my face for a turn.
I see that list, and I think it looks pretty solid, but the only thing I would be scared of is if your opponent has multiple heavy targets, how do you deal with that?
And generally speaking, in a two list, my other list would have some serious armor cracking because this list is kind of not going to do that. But this is a good list.
So this is the list you're going to drop against things like things possibly like Zal, but and maybe Trolls, but more than likely Kricks and mercenaries and things like that is what you're looking to drop this list against.
Yeah, and maybe some Circle builds and maybe some Legion builds, depending on what their War Beast layout looks like. But nothing with like 4+ heavies in it. More than likely that I've got other lists to handle that, or you know, to attempt to handle that at least. But when I look at most War Machine factions, and obviously not Convergence necessarily, and maybe not Menoth, but casters I can kill, and lots of infantry. And Kane loves that. So that's one side of the coin for the list I'm going to be running. But I think I'm really excited to see how Terran turns this list on, because I don't generally play for assassination, but my opponent is going to – like they're going to see the threat of it, like you said.
They're going to have to play as if you can take the assassination.
Correct.
And that just goes back to what Keith will tell you when he plays with Elitch. The threat of his feet sometimes is more valuable than using his feet and keeping him safe and just having his feet there and saying, if you put your Colossal in to contest that zone, it's going to die. That's more valuable than actually using it, because what if you botch some damage rolls?
Yeah, for sure.
But just keeping Terran there safe, not so far back she can't do anything, but not so far forward that your opponent can just – she doesn't have stealth. She doesn't have prowl, anything like that. She's 15-12 with 5, so she's pretty relatively easy to kill. But keeping her safe maybe behind a wall in a forest somewhere and just threatening the assassination, or saying, okay, you're playing with Protectorate and you have the Battle Engine and the Harbingers behind it. Good luck moving forward. Something like that.
I'll play that list all day against Harby. I don't think a Harby player wants to see that list, unless they're running like some kind of funky build where it's Harby and a million jacks, or it's not a kill box scenario and she can keep way back.
Sure.
Because if she's got to get anywhere near the kill box, I mean, you know, cycling snipe and it's just, she's going to die. But
absolutely. And, anyway, and one thing playing against her is if you do not have a volume of attacks to force her to stop using martyrdom,
it's a problem.
She's just going to use it until your attacks are done, and it's awful for you. But when you have that volume of attacks, she's basically going to be like, well, there's no point in me doing this.
Yep. I agree.
So yeah, if you make it evident she can't get anywhere with the martyrdom, then the martyrdom just plain stops.
Yeah.
And that is one of her biggest abilities, like putting tough on errants with a Piper and then using martyrdom and self-sacrifice. It's one of the most frustrating things to play against. But when you can say, well, you can martyrdom and you can make your tough rolls, but after all that is done, I'm still going to have 10 more attacks.
Yeah.
Then she's in a bad way.
Or I'm just going to kill your caster now that you're down to like half your health. You know,
it's like, oh yeah, thanks for being at 5 health. Have one bounce from my Stormstrider and you're dead.
Yeah, pretty much. So, well, that's enough about, enough about Signar. How do you feel about that, Bill?
Pretty happy.
All right, good. So, Danny, here's the difference between me with Terran and you with Terran is you've been playing Terran a lot because you're a Merc player.
I have.
It's all new and exciting to me because I've never even considered her before because, you know, frankly, before this buff she got in this errata, she wasn't worth 2 points in Signar.
I will say before this change in the errata, which if people don't know why it got changed, there's a very clear reason why it got changed. Her wording on the rule Shadowfire before said models, friendly faction models, ignore the model hit when making attacks, and that's simply an unclear wording of a rule. And I found after playing her several times that her most important abilities from most important to least important, Shadowfire is actually on the bottom of the list. And there's two reasons for that. One, you have to actually be able to use it effectively. And the threat of it being there is about the most effect you should ever get from it against a good player.
Yeah, they're not going to give it to you. We talked about that and when we talked about her. It wasn't that – we kind of said the same thing. We're it's not going to be that you're going to get assassinations on good players because they know what she does, especially since it's a rat and now people have been talking about her a lot. Sure. It's that it forces them to play differently, which is a win for 2 points.
But as far as I'm concerned, the number one most important ability is Black Penny. Iron Rot follows, and Shadowfire is last.
Okay.
And there's reasons for all of those. But as far as Shadowfire goes, specifically on Shadowfire, when I use Shadowfire, I usually use it on a battle engine or a heavy to shoot the support that's behind it.
So you you mentioned on Facebook when we were talking a little bit earlier before we started recording some interesting stuff about Iron Rot, and that's one of the ones that when I first glanced at it, I was just kind of like, you know, whatever.
Why would I ever use this?
Yeah. Then I started thinking about it more after I talked to you, and I'd like to hear what, you know, let's tell everybody what you have to say about it, because I think it's pretty interesting.
Well, Iron Rot is okay. It's like Monster Hunter from Alton Ashley. It's okay. It's not going to win you any games through the damage it does. But effects on attacks that modify the damage of the attack are considered to have come from the attack. I clarified this on the rules forums before I'm saying it. I posted a thread a couple days ago just to make sure I was correct here. But Iron Rot coming from a Mage Lock pistol on Terran, targeting a Warjack from Protectorate that has Enliven, will trigger Enliven 100% of the time so long as it hits. She has a magical gun, so no shooting doesn't work. And Iron Rot does D3 damage to the whole system of a Warjack it hits, so it does damage to a Warjack. So you have a Rat 7 gun that you can shoot twice, and if your opponent has two instances of Enliven on the table, you can trigger both of them with a 2-point model.
Oh, Danny, you're just like just solving all my fucking problems out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That's some good
if
tech,
if there's
man.
One thing you cry about more than fucking purification, it's everything that Menoth does.
Well, it is purification. Just for the record, it's both. It's they're together in the same thing. But yeah, I like that a lot, and I that just adds another tool for me. Getting back to my list for a second, a lot of Protector players are maybe not familiar with the way that some of the ways that like Errants and Electro Leap work together and things like that. Electro Leap not being an attack sidesteps a lot of stuff like Errant's self-sacking and soul collections, and it depends on the wording of the effect, but a lot of the effects, you know, they can still be martyred, for example, because that's just if a model's destroyed. But that's just another tool like that to get around some of the control bullshit that Menoth can do, and that's a matchup that I personally loathe. It is a problem for me.
Absolutely.
I get tilted
I think most competitive Signar players would agree that Protectorate is one of those matchups that Signar genuinely has a problem with. I think it's why on the top levels of play you see E-Kane and E-Striker often, because they have built-in abilities that can simply deal with the shooting that Menoth can output, but also their defensive abilities that are just bonkers, because when you can instack no shooting with Enliven and no knockdown from the book, yeah, and you have the fact that this is coming off of an army that's probably two heavies and a couple lights, or a heavy, a battle engine, and a light, and a light, or like all the infantry you need from Menoth is usually Errants, Zealots, combination of that, maybe Bastions from time to time. But when you have 100-plus hitboxes of models outputting that much damage that you can't shoot, they can move out of turn, they're hard to kill, they hit ridiculously hard in melee. It's like now with Terran, you have the choice of killing their choir by shooting their jacks and shooting what's behind their jacks that they're hiding, or triggering Enliven, and now your Stormwall can charge and they can't walk away.
So you said something to me, and I think you were just trolling me, but we can have this discussion a little bit as well. You said that you like Terran better in Menoth than in Signar.
I think because of the high power of shooting, she actually is better. If you are using her specifically for the assassination run.
Okay. Well, elaborate on that, because I'm curious.
The reason I say that is you have the Admonisher gun from the Battle Engine. You have Reckoners. You have Redeemers. You have all the stupid jacks that have guns.
Yeah,
you
have Vanquishers. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, all the dumb jacks that are +2/+2, they're from the choir. They're going to be boosted. Maybe you have Eye of Menoth, or maybe you have P. Krios. You knock everything down, then you drop their Colossal with Terran, and then you have Flare from the Reckoner and a boosted damage roll. Now your Rat 1 Warjax, the Rate of Fire 3 guys, no longer have to boost because you're knocked down, and even if you're behind a wall, you're -2 defense. So knocked down behind a wall with -2 defense, you're still only at like a 7 or a 9 or something like that. And you no longer really need to boost to hit with any of your guns. And the higher power of your guns with the boosting, because when you come from a Signar perspective, you're looking to do, just like you said, the several attacks at power 14 unboosted, or the several attacks at power 12 unboosted. Whereas from Menoth, you can just say, oh, you have a Warcaster, armor 18, you're knocked down. I ignore your Colossal for line of sight. Let me boost 7 damage rolls into your caster.
Yep. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think
as far as usefulness goes, overall, you're probably right that she is more useful on a general level.
Mm-hmm.
But with the errata of Shadowfire specifically, I think Shadowfire will be more useful in Menoth because you can
– because of P. Krios specifically.
P. Krios, but you can also get to – you can also, like, if they bunch their vassals or their choir right up behind their if you are playing against, like, Signar and you have your vassals and your choir go ancillary attack, things like that, you can start hitting support that you never could even see before, like the Creel Stone. You drop the beast in front of the Creel Stone. Now you can see the Creel Stone and just shoot it directly.
Right.
Or you can shoot the Junior Warcaster directly rather than having to shoot what's in front. And one of the things that – and this just may be my playstyle, but if you can – if you have like an 80% or better chance to kill a key piece of support and not have much retaliation from it, I almost always take that.
Yeah, I think – I mean that's the – with ranged attacks, definitely. I mean I totally agree. If you can pick out support early – which means ranged attacks, generally speaking.
Absolutely,
you do it for sure. Where I disagree with you a little bit, although I definitely think Terran with P. Krios is terrifying because she legitimately fixes like his one problem, which you can't knock down a Colossal, you know, and then therefore that caster doesn't die. So that point I 100% agree with. That is a nasty, nasty assassination run that now. Unless you pretty much have access to no knockdown, there's almost no way to defend.
Yeah, it just got better.
Right, it just got better out of nowhere for no reason, which sucks a little bit. But hey, but
maybe
otherwise,
something to complain about.
Yeah, right.
But no, I think I'm going to agree with you. But I think I think the reason I'll agree with you is specifically from the effect of snipe.
Yeah.
Whether it be gun mages using the snipe fire type, or it be the spell snipe. Being able to drop out the champion blocking the Creel Stone or the Jack blocking the choir or what have you, I think that really is what puts Signar over the top in every turn use of her. Now, I did say Black Penny is probably my favorite ability on her, and there's a reason for that. Especially if you're not if you're playing her in Mercs, you have to play her in Highborn. There's no other way to play her, so she'll gain advanced deploy in Highborn. But if you're not playing Mercs, she doesn't have advanced deploy. She deploys with the rest of your army. So what I have, and I don't like losing her early, the later in the game it gets, the better she becomes most of the time, except for going on the assassination run. And the reason for that is she has 2 very accurate guns, which if your opponent's down to like 5 models and you're down to like 5 models, if you can simply ignore those models, that's extremely powerful. But as far as Black Penny goes, I like using her on an every turn basis with Black Penny. And the module, like I said earlier, the module with Gun Mages and the Buccaneer. The Buccaneer, a lot of the times, will stop that melee infantry from coming directly at the Gun Mages. But let's say you're having a bad day and for whatever reason, something got to you. Well, Terran sitting behind the Gun Mages gets to aim for a Rat 9 and use her Black Penny ability to shoot out the infantry blocking off the Gun Mages. Maybe then the Buccaneer can turn around and boost a melee attack against that third or fourth infantry model, and you get to clear up your Gun Mages, which now get to go shoot. So your models aren't doing less work. They're just allocating their work to different places. Instead of going farther out, you're using the Black Penny and the Buccaneer at this point to clean up the models before the Gun Mages activate. Then the Gun Mages can activate freely.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same concept as Dead-Eyed Gun Mages shooting the back rank of Dead-Eyed Gun Mages shooting, clearing the front rank off.
Exactly, exactly.
So I like that. I'm pretty excited to use her, to be honest with you. And I think we can kind of wrap up Terran talk. But just generally speaking, she went from a solo I couldn't care less about to some new and exciting piece.
Absolutely.
And that's cool. I like that in an errata, just sort of out of nowhere.
Something becomes useful.
Yeah, right. That's pretty cool. Bill, anything to add to that? You've been remarkably silent.
I think she falls in line with a lot of other power feats and things that seem obvious to use right away. I'm just going to kill you on turn two or turn three. That the later that you can hold on to those things, especially ones that are threats to end the game, the more valuable they become.
Yeah, kind of just going back into that, the threat of it is more powerful than the actual thing. So cool. All right, so let's do something else. Let's talk about dealing with infantry machine. Bill, I feel like you've got a lot more to say on this topic. So what concepts do you think about when you think about dealing with infantry machine?
Well, the times that infantry machine becomes a problem are when I'm playing a particularly low attack count list. And I think that's really what it comes down to is the volume of attacks versus the number of models you need to kill with them. And you need to start trying to find value in your models that can either multiple attacks or attacks that kill multiple models. So the obvious shit like sprays and AoEs are a no-brainer. But models, maybe that you didn't notice have two melee attacks instead of one, or even overtake or something that gets them deeper into that second attack, really are a big deal to maximize against infantry machine. Champions come to mind. They're pretty expensive, and they are attributing to your low model count, which is putting you at that disadvantage. But they make it up by maybe killing two models a turn instead of one.
Right.
Like you can expect from a lot of, regular grunt infantry.
I think one concept that kind of immediately sprang to mind is against infantry machine, you're rarely worried about let me rephrase that. Just the infantry swarm. Let's just refer to it that way. When facing down the swarm of models, a 40, 50, 60 model count on the other side of the table, that kind of list, you're not generally worried about armor cracking almost ever. No. So really what it becomes is, what do I have that can either automatically hit or hits reliably or just create such a volume of attacks like sprays, for example, that I can reliably kill a bunch of models per turn without giving away my list? I think that's a big key to it.
I'm going to have to agree with you on that one. Anything that I am more in the stance that when I build a list to play against infantry – anything that can earn its points back every turn, yep, is extremely valuable. We're talking about Widowmakers. We're talking about Kel Balok and Terran. The Bloat Thrall, especially the Bloat Thrall. Coming from a Crick's perspective, you have many, many ways to give negative armor. Yep. If you put Parasite of Curse or Shadows, something to that effect, on a unit, and then put a 5-inch pie plate on the unit, that blast damage is going from a base of 7 to a 9 or a 10 with Parasite. And POW 10 blast damage is ridiculous and will deal with lots of models in one turn.
Let's talk about and that's a really good point, Danny. Let's talk about like a conceptual list examples of that sort of street sweeper kind of list. But let's talk about it in maybe – and we don't have to break down like full lists, but just some concepts of lists in factions that maybe traditionally have issues. Like when you were just saying that, I immediately thought of like Jarl or Grimm not running the Krill Stone, because why do you need a Krill Stone if you're not buffing armor?
Right.
You know, right. If you're out to kill infantry, you know.
Let's say Jarl or Grimm is who we want to talk about. Both of those have something that most troll warlocks do not have, and that is a gun.
Right.
And a warcaster with a gun or a warlock with a gun is the first step to killing a lot of models every turn.
So, Bill, can you think of an example of – and again, not a full list, but just a conceptually sort of a list concept of a – like within one of those factions, a list that could deal with infantry better?
Well, you mean you want to stick with the casters you just mentioned?
No, I'm talking about – well, in some of the factions that people perceive as being not killing infantry well. Like, we don't have to sit here and talk about how let's build a Signar list to kill dudes. Like, that just happens, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about maybe some of those factions that maybe have some trouble with it. So, you know, whatever you'd like to talk about basically. But I guess what I'm saying is, can you think of any other examples of something like that, cutting support out and putting in more business models that kill – infantry.
Well, going back to what Danny said, where he said, 40 points of business and 15 points of support. I think that any list that has that is going to be victim to infantry swarm.
Mm-hmm.
Just by virtue of your list composition, you don't have enough attacks. But I think that, you know, you guys are both kind of driving towards trolls, and I really don't think that trolls has this problem. Although a lot of the builds that people tend to run, like that Ultra Brick, definitely do. But having access to scatter gunners with the UA is ridiculous. I think that by itself is crazy. Bombers are awesome. That's like the best gun that you could possibly want. A rate of fire 2 AOE 4.
Yep. Bombers. I feel like Chad from Muse on Minis really exemplified how to beat the infantry swarm using something like Kalandra, who doesn't have a gun, doesn't really have any way to directly, or I'm sorry, not Kalandra, but Gristle, doesn't have any way to directly kill a infantry swarm herself, but you put a bomber and an impaler, range 12 AOE 4 times 2.
Yep.
That's an extremely good start, and then she has the innate ability of saying you can't give or receive orders.
So what you're saying is pair efficient ranged attacks with control elements that'll hopefully keep your efficient ranged attacks in the game for multiple rounds.
Absolutely.
Like, and don't give the bomber up after 2 shots. You want to like get multiple shots out of that.
Anything that can pick out, like as you mentioned a couple episodes ago, the marked men of a unit, or possibly the support solos. Maybe you're playing, it's got Nis and the Death Star, and it's got Chaozzies, and you're just having a hard time dealing with it. If you can pick out Joe, that's an extremely good start to your game against that list. So having something with magic bullets, say Jarl, or the Admonisher from Minoth, or something to that effect, where you can indirectly hit models of your choice, is extremely, extremely good. And I'm going to have to agree with Bill here on the troll aspect. I really don't feel trolls have a hard time against infantry in general. I think where they have a hard time is Kricks, and that's just because Kricks has their number.
Yeah, I mean, and again, we're not necessarily – I don't want to make it all about trolls, although our buddy Bill McKibben was the one who asked this kind of as a rebuttal question to our anti-brick chat we did last week. Now we're kind of doing anti-infantry swarm. But within trolls, there are options, definitely. The issue is there are options that unfortunately you're starting to dive into the depths of the faction a little bit. And maybe having to put stuff on the table that you don't put in a ton of lists otherwise. Like, do scatter gunners go in every troll list? No. Do they go in your list, your anti-Kricks list? You know, probably, right? But that means buying a unit that maybe you don't think otherwise is going to make a lot of lists, and sometimes that can be kind of a bitter pill to swallow.
Well, and that's fine, but I think Bomber does go in pretty much every list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a component to it for sure, is the Bomber. I mean, no question, like, you want to kill dudes, Bomber's legit at it. But you got to have a way to protect it, and that comes into some of the control feats, Grimm's feat, for example. You know, some of the control elements, Jarl's Clouds. I mean, Grimm and Jarl probably are your two best anti-swarm casters in that faction. Maybe you could throw Calandra in there as well, just because of all the dice fixing.
Yeah.
So one thing I would also say is extremely good against the infantry swarm. There are some infantry swarms like 30 Bane Knights, which are skewed to a point where this may not be a good example.
Sure.
But a brick list against an infantry swarm is actually a good answer. There are few infantry swarms that exist that can genuinely just swarm and envelop the better brick lists and tear them apart piece by piece, because that's how the brick list operates. It says, you cannot kill my three heavies until I decide to let you. And when you're playing something like the troll brick and you pop your feet, Mull goes in and kills 15 guys by spending one fury. That's like, you don't care if you lose Mulg now, because he's gotten his points back by killing those 15 guys. Now,
right.
You probably won't, because you've killed so much of the infantry. But that is one thing where you can, if you can stack armor high enough and prevent your opponent from dropping it so low that like a couple of Bane Knights or a couple of Bane Thralls or a couple of things like that that can connect would kill your heavy, then you're fine. Something that stops melee attacks, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think you're kind of getting into what we're talking about with control again, where control elements like Gristle's, you know, No Orders, or Epic Striker having
rebuke,
those sorts of spells, even, you know, things like Crippling Grasp and stuff like that that can stop units from charging, can really take some of the wind out of those sails. Because again, if you've got some armor stacked and they can't charge, they're probably in trouble.
Well, forget about that. You just made this you know, killing machine into a roadblock because they can't charge.
Absolutely. Yeah, you've slowed up the army, hopefully giving, if you do have guns in the list, or ranged elements of any kind, the opportunity to just get another turn of work in, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's things like Legion has Saren, where you don't actually stop your opponent from moving. You're just saying, sure, you have 30 Bane Knights, they just can't attack this round.
Yeah.
And you jam your Angels and your Scythians and whatnot in there, and kill maybe 10 guys or so, and then the next round you do it again, and now you've killed 20 guys, your opponent's killed none of your beasts, and then they can start attacking. And when you can effectively time walk an opponent, that is an extremely, even if it is through a feat, that's extremely, extremely powerful. I would say another element to defeating the infantry swarm, especially in the current meta as it goes, is if you can stop healing, and through stopping healing, stop tough, you will have an extremely, extremely solid game against infantry swarms.
So let's talk about real quickly. Let's talk about who has answers to tough.
Well, hang on a second. Before we get too far away from the point, I'm not sure I can get on board with the whole bricks. I mean, last week we got on this podcast and said the way, you know, one of the three valid ways to beat a brick is to envelop it. Mm-hmm. And I still stand by that. I think that most bricks are pretty directional in their, you know, you need to hit me from this side for me to still be a brick. And I still believe that swinging 60 models and completely circling the wagons around a brick is still valid. I'm not sure that a brick is something that I'll go on the record as saying this is the answer to infantry machine for sure.
No, I don't even know if that's necessarily what Danny was saying, as much as a brick that has control elements, where with like maybe the troll brick, it's the wall.
Right. Like just being able to say, I'm playing Ebalder, I'm going to kill three of your models every turn, and you are going to kill zero of mine.
Right.
That is an answer to a lot of the infantry swarms that exist. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to brick up and I'm going to live forever, but when you kill your first light war beast, and I've killed 10 of your infantry models already, and then you can move on to your next one, that's really, really, it's more of a game plan for the long game, but it is a way to prevent your opponent from strictly winning because they have more models. When you can stack armor, put things in places where they can't win on scenario, because one thing any jam list, any swarm list can do very easily, if they go, especially if they go first, like Shay or something like that, that can go first with the plus one, is they don't care if they lose all their models. They're just going to win on scenario because they've got three or four units, they've got several solos, several warjacks, and they're just throwing them into you and dominating zones.
All right, so let's suppose this exists to win scenarios.
Yeah, let's change gears just for a second, because that's a point that I was actually thinking about earlier as well, is if you're playing a swarm and you've looked at the opponent's list and go, yeah, that's a swarm, and I'm going to have to play a patient, pick-it-apart, controlling game, the last thing you want to do, if you have the option, don't let them go first if you win the roll, in my opinion. Most infantry swarm lists either rely on fast dudes, a huge volume of guys so they can absorb casualties, some sort of recursion mechanic, or advanced deploy. You know, the things that they're either getting up the field fast or they're getting up the field intact. Taking first turn from them, I feel like, is super critical.
So examples of that would be Shay getting first turn and advanced deploy in his list. The Gristle theme list getting hoof it for free on the first turn. What else is there? The Epic de Negra list that Keith has been talking about with 20 Satixis Raiders.
Yeah.
Where you have the Epic de Negra feat and you have 20 Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other examples of that. But anytime your opponent has a controlling feat or the ability to go first more often, or some kind of way other than their army, outside of their army, to control scenario, and then they have 20 advanced deploy dudes, or they have like speed 8 models, or they have dash, or they have, you know, some way of going faster and getting models up the table faster and stopping you from getting to zones. I'm 100% with you on this. Even though you think, well, if I go second, they can't score until my turn, that doesn't matter, because when Epic de Negra pops her feet, Epic de Negra is going to score on your turn.
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of to summarize, because we're kind of moving around quickly, but so we're talking about you need volumes of attacks, whether that's from template-related attacks, sprays, AoEs, etc.
Correct.
You need to not let them go first, if you can help it. You probably want answers to tough.
Absolutely. And if we can just touch on that really quick, the reason I brought that up is when you look at top lists, often they will either be top jam lists. They will have pirates. They will have boom howlers. They will have the 4+ tough options. Obviously, you're going to have problems with. And then if not, they're going to have the Piper giving errants tough. So you have tough errants. You have self-sacrifice, which you can stop through stopping healing. So anything you can do to like grievous wounds or entropic force or anything like that you can do. Mortality. Trolls have mortality now. Anything that can stop healing. And make it to where one attack will kill one guy, instead of saying there's a chance I'll need two or three attacks to kill one guy. That just, when your opponent makes those lucky tough rolls, their attrition curve goes up substantially. And obviously they can't build their list on that, but you have to be able to play against that.
Yeah. So another thing, this is kind of a question for you, Bill, and also you, Danny, just sort of a yes or no kind of answer, though. What do you feel like, as a new player, you had more or less trouble with infantry machine or swarms?
You mean opposed to now?
Yeah, like from you know, first year war machine player Bill to now Bill, who had who had a more difficult time with swarms?
Well, first-year War Machine Bill was playing with a bunch of other first-year War Machine players, and Infantry Machine wasn't a thing. We all were playing, oh, man, look at these cool robots, you know?
Yeah, right.
That being said, it kind of did parlay into my main opponent being a Shea player, so I did get used to that stuff. I'm just being a better player now, I think, means I'm better against the stuff. But yeah, it used to be infuriating for sure to deal with tough pirates all the time. And well, I found myself metaing to play against that stuff.
Yeah. The reason I asked that question, and it's kind of a dumb question because, I mean, everything's easier when you're better, right? But I guess the reason I'm asking it is I find, like, infantry swarms are always powered by, like, some solos or some specific models. And when you're new, you just don't know which ones to pick out or you're just not familiar with it. And you see that, like, the first time you play that dude who's got, like, you know, 50 Krix infantry models running screaming at you with, like, a Peace Guard feet behind it or whatever, you're like, I can never beat this. This is unstoppable. Like, it you know, I got crushed.
I will say early on in my career of War Machine, which has been about 8 years now, like I said, I played Krix and solely Krix for just over 7 years. Almost 8 years, and then I started playing mercenaries. I was the guy that in a newer meta had two warjacks, which was two Death Rippers, and then I had all the infantry in the world.
Right,
and I found, at least from a growing and less experienced meta that was growing, when I went to local tournaments and I took my, you know, 30 model, 40 model army to a what would be equivalent to a 35-point tournament now, there was people I just beat because they didn't have a way or didn't have the knowledge of what's the best thing for me to kill now.
And this parlays right into the point where all new players think Krix is literally unbeatable for like a year because they don't know how to deal with it. And their buddy who plays Krix suddenly is just kicking their ass because it's much easier to just run screaming at your opponent with a bunch of models than to carefully protect your Warpwolf Stalker and get the 10 points out of him that he's worth.
Right.
As a new player.
Playing with Cromac and putting Warpath on and then going with your Stalker and Berserk and killing three guys and walking and killing three more guys and then sprinting away. It's like, okay, I killed six guys, but they've still got 40 left. And when you say, well, I only killed six guys this round, that's really demoralizing. Well, it's like that's the game you have to play if you're playing with a low model count army like that. You have to play the game where it's okay to kill six models a turn.
Yeah, and
as long as in return your opponent doesn't kill any.
Yeah, you can't be given that Warpwolf away. So, Bill, I mean, would you agree with that statement that for new players, it's generally much more difficult? Like, I feel like it's one of the most hard things to learn about War Machine is how to deal with a swarm of dudes.
I think it's got a serious demoralization factor.
Yeah,
in like Danny just said, the body count isn't as high. And you look at the body pile and then you look at the pile that's still active, and that imbalance is demoralizing, where you feel like you didn't do any work. Even you know, if you don't realize that the four Bane Knights you just killed could have killed a heavy if you didn't kill them. I think that it's a psychological thing that new players might not get yet.
Yeah.
And you're right. I think that's why everybody starts out thinking Krix is busted. And nobody's going to argue that Krix is powerful. But, yeah, where people just – I think people quit the game over Infantry Machine sometimes at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's two attitudes that end up happening. It's either you get defeatist or you get mad about it and you start looking for answers.
Yeah.
And the players who look for answers end up being long-term War Machine players. And the players who get mad and start blaming other components, they usually don't.
Back to Space Marines.
Yeah, or whatever. They just don't play the game.
Right.
Long-term.
And one thing I will say, I think it was Jamie P that said this, but the term balanced is the new broken.
Mm-hmm.
If you have your circle army, for example, we were talking about that with three heavies in it, and that's your hitting power, But then you also have your infantry, whether it's blood trackers or whether it's – or it's Thran or whatever it is that's in front of them. Sometimes that 8 to 10 points that's in front of your three beasts that are going to go up and berserk shit and they're gonna kill everything and they're going to do the work, even if that 8 to 10 points doesn't do anything, if it stops your opponent from jamming you for an extra turn or two, that's really worth the points even though they didn't kill anything. Just like the Buccaneer with the Gun Mages is worth the points if it can stop your opponent from jamming them in melee.
Yeah,
it's worth the points right there, even if it never knocks anything down or kills anything in melee.
Well, and it's just another control element. So control, you got to kind of grab the bull by the horns and lead it around if you can, while simultaneously just picking at it. You know, I love the fast cav units that have with guns. All the light cav units with guns are exceptional against infantry machine because they can usually come in, shoot, and dance back out of threat range.
Sure.
So you get that repetition where they earn their points over time. They don't earn their points in one turn, but they don't give themselves up. So you know, and then you got to look maybe for elements that you are either willing to give up or have some sort of defensive mechanisms built in to make it very difficult to remove. Things like polarity fielded centurions, the clam jack. I mean, shit. You know, even putting that in front of a Krix army, clamjacks a lot of times can absorb a decent amount of charges from even really high POW infantry, and just stall them while you're just, you know, it's
taking them away.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? Is it in like Thai boxing where they kind of clinch each other up and then just kind of, you know, you just start kicking the dude in the body until he goes down? Like you're stopping his you're holding him back while hurting him. And that's sort of the mentality you have to have against an infantry swarm. And the main thing you got to be is patient, and you can't give shit away.
Yeah, you can't get frustrated that it's the fourth round of the game and you've only managed to kill one full unit. If it's the fourth round of the game, you've killed a unit and you've lost nothing, you're ahead. Don't get frustrated and persevere through that. And a prime example of that is if you go watch the finals of Iron Gauntlet at Lock and Load, the video of Keith playing I can't remember the other guy's name, but it was Elitch versus Kallus with three Ravagors.
Yeah.
He did not lose a Ravagor until both of his infantry units were gone. And the Ravagors were the things in that game doing the work.
Yeah.
Putting scathers out and picking off infantry and putting fire on the table, and he played well. And maybe the Hex Hunters didn't do a lot of work. Maybe the Legionnaires didn't do a lot of work. They did some, but not a substantial portion. But what they really did was protected the triple Ravagor and gave the triple Ravagor the ability to play the attrition game effectively until it whittled down to, now I have my Ravagors and you've got a few models in your feet left. Who's going to win?
Yeah. And sadly, I feel like we're advocating running three Ravagors. Dear God.
Something else that I think we didn't touch on that I think bears mentioning is the absolute worst weakness of units.
Elaborate on that, Bill. I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Command checks.
Command checks. I was going to guess. I would say reliably you need three or more, but if you have something like the Piper that the fear, the terror goes away and then it comes back, that's really good because then you're not a terrifying entity. You become a terrifying entity and you have to make the terror check again. Gators, obviously, if you have three units of Gatormen, Hellfire. Epic Alexia has Hellfire. That causes a command check. There's a couple Krix Warcasters that have Hellfire. Massive casualties. Just anything like that. One key for playing against Krix living infantry is they cannot give it Fearless unless they are playing Epic Scar. Epic Scar is the only way in Krix to give Krix living infantry Fearless.
Yeah,
so
Satixis models, right?
Satixis models, correct. So yeah. If you're playing against Blood Witches or Raiders or anything like that, from Krix, and they are not playing Epic Scar, figure out how you can kill half of them and put two terror checks on them. Or if you have, maybe they're playing Raiders and the Death Jack, telekinesis the Death Jack into the Raiders and force a command check.
Yeah, I guess it's more know the rules for command checks.
Yep.
No, realize when you've killed half that unit and make them make the command check now. Maybe it's time to start working on another unit.
That's actually what I was about to say. If you make a unit fail a command check, in this situation, a melee unit, cool. Stop shooting at them. Move on to something else because they're out of it for next turn. So if those raiders, you know, you kill half the raiders, they fail their command. Well, and you got guns that'll reach the rest of their list, or you've got, you know, attacks that are relevant against the rest of their army. Use them. Use them on the rest of the army if you can, because
absolutely.
That's his target priority. I mean, know what's threatening, and they're not threatening the next turn. Obviously, you need to take them into account. Like, you don't just completely ignore them, but you can completely ignore them for the rest of that turn.
It's not even that they're not threatening, and a lot of times they're in the fucking way.
Yeah. They're in the way, and the way to fix it is they have to run away from you, which is what you want.
Yeah.
Right. Either have to stand still or move away from you. And a lot of times, like you said, if they're in the way, now the rules say you have to move. You cannot move towards enemy models while you're broken.
Right.
Correct.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. And they can't make free strikes, which is huge.
Yep.
But like, and to do that, it's not even attempting to maximize the number of terror checks on a single unit. It's maximizing the number of command checks, period. Which means if you have a unit of Gators, or you have the Piper, or you have something like that, it's like, make your plan killing half of two units and putting the Piper up there in one unit and giving a unit that's engaging both of those units, both of your opponent's units, terror. So now you've caused two command checks from massive casualties. You're going to cause two command checks on one unit from the Piper and your unit being there gaining terror. And you're going to cause a fifth command check on the other unit because part of your unit's engaging over there.
Right. Yeah, you can basically cause multiple command checks with one terrifying unit. Which is sweet, and just sort of maximizing that. One thing I will say though is they're not, and you used a good example in the Piper, which is obviously sort of the exception to the rule. But a lot of times when you're playing against the infantry horde, the kind of factions that we're talking about that maybe struggle a little bit, they don't necessarily have a ton of terrifying stuff. It's not 100% true, but I mean, you know, I guess in trolls it would be the Fenblades. They pop their mini feet,
yep.
And then they would run at you. So that's a deal. I've had that. God, I've had that fuck me so many times.
It's super easy to do. They can spread out because of the drummer.
Yep.
And they can engage two or three units on their own, no problem.
Yep.
And you don't give a shit if they die. They're out there to die.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything like no quarter on Sea Dogs or on the Fenblades or Piper or anything that can grant the terror ability, yeah. Any spells that force command checks. I know I may be wrong on this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but Boom Howler and Mark One Rage Howl caused command checks. Is that still true?
Yep.
So
yeah,
there's
just happened
one.
To me the other day. My Sentinels broke.
Yeah, there's another one. Just like most armies, you will have your 10 points of models or so to protect your heavies. A lot of those models that like the Fenblades or the Boomhowlers or the Pirates that you're throwing out there to protect your Colossal or your heavies have the ability to cause command checks. And it may be down on the list. It's like, well, Call of Defiance for 4+ tough is a lot better, but Rage Howl to get the Warjacks -2 attack rolls and the one more command check, all you need them to do is fail one command check. So if you can put five out there, if one of those fails, and when you've got five on the table, that's pretty good odds. That's when you start getting in the range of I can count on my terrifying entities at this point.
Well, and let's flip the switch on that discussion for a second, just to the opposite, is you need to make sure you have elements that stop your guys from breaking, because a lot of jam, you know, a lot of infantry swarms there's a lot of terror. You know, the Doom Reaver swarm, a lot of Crick stuff. There's going to be abomination and terror causing units out there. And all it takes is, like, if you've got that, you know, nice Boomhauer screen, or you've got a screen of infantry out in the way, or, you know, whatever, you're some sort of pikeman type unit, and they're there to die, but they're there to absorb some charges and they've got reach and they're in the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
That unit breaks. Generally speaking, it's spread out enough that your opponent can now just run right through it. It could just be like an auto loss for you. Especially if your list is predicated on behind that unit, a bunch of guns doing work for multiple turns.
Sure, sure.
So having your screening units break is extremely bad, and you need to have a way to fix that ASAP or just make them fearless in the first place.
So ways I've found to do that playing mercenaries, obviously you have the Piper. I don't need to mention him. That's units only. That doesn't help your solos.
Right.
But obviously you have the Piper. But I found that one of my biggest problems playing mercenaries is that fearless is not common. It's actually extremely uncommon. Even Boom Howler, as much as I want them to be, as much as they look like they are not fearless.
Right.
Yeah. And I have to come up with more inventive ways. So commanders with command 10 or better are fairly reliable.
Yep.
Mercenaries doesn't have those. What they have is command 9 commanders like Hawk and Stannis and Madeline that can base to base to give a plus 1, making a command 10 commander.
Gotcha.
And the other thing is if you're running mercenaries, so if you're running Boom Howler, if you are running the pirates specifically have Hawk, but if you're just running like a unit of press gangers as a jam or something to that effect, you have Rock Bottom. And Rock Bottom has bot loyalty, which says you can spend one of his coins to make any mercenary, not just unit, any mercenary automatically pass a failed command check. And that does not necessarily mean you failed a command check to terror. Maybe you have a pronto roll on Thor that you're trying to roll, and you fail your pronto by rolling an 11, spend a coin, automatically pass it. It's just an added benefit, but that's he can sweet. Automatically pass any failed command check. So he has the added benefit of getting your prontos or things like that, but he will cause your solos like Gorman, who can break all the time, or cause your units that are command 7 or 8 mercenary units to, okay, they failed. I don't even have to reroll. They automatically pass.
So as far as commander goes, like that ability I feel like is underrated by a lot of players. Like the command 10 commanders are really pretty reliable, especially if like your units have the UA with a banner and you're getting rerolls. Getting that command from 9 to 10 is really huge. Bill, I know you've been playing Red a lot. Does Red have any command fixing really?
Well,
look, is Virus a 10? Virus 2?
I don't think so. No. Jesus. he does give he gives fearless to
I feel like Retribution is on that level of Searforge where it's kind of just a joke. Not you don't really have to worry about it.
Yeah. Keep saying that to Bill. He's just gonna.
I don't care if people want to underestimate Retribution all they want. That's fine, but yeah, they have.
No, I think they're fine. Virus 2 is definitely a command 10. Just to throw that out there.
Yeah, nice. And in his tier, he gives the Dawn Guard fearless anyway.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But they also have that solo that nobody likes, the Dawn Guard Sire that is a commander 10.
Oh, okay.
I'm almost positive he's a commander 10. I think he's only 2 points, but nobody plays him.
Yeah. I'm excited about the Stormblade Commander because I believe he's a Command 10 commander, and those are not super common.
The Dawnguard Sire is a Command 10, and he is only 2 points.
Yeah. Nice. Well, that's something, I guess. I still don't love that guy marshaling Jax, but it's not a terrible idea if you're running an army full of Command 8 and 9 units that don't have banners.
Yeah, that's one thing I found in Mercs is that like even the units that can get characters like Sea Dogs with walls, they are still a command 8 with walls on there, and that is horrifying when they flee. It's just like, oh god.
8's bad, man. I mean, generally speaking, that's my number one problem with Rangers. I love Rangers, but man, they run away a lot cuz of that 8.
Yeah.
It's really easy to fail it.
So if you're playing like the new Stormblade Captain command 10, is there do you think that you would find room in your lists where, okay, you can't have the Piper in this list, the Piper's in your other list, you have a captain at command 10, can you put Madeline in your lists like that? Do you think you would have room to put Madeline and make it an 11 where you only fail on a 12? Or do you find that a 1 in 12 chance of failing is really all you need?
I'm generally fairly comfortable with 10, but there might be a list like an Epic Striker list where I'd throw Madeline anyway and then just get that added bonus. But the problem with that list is that Striker is already a 10. So you're not really like you can just literally just have her stand out. You don't need the Storm Lady Captain at that point.
Right.
So you can reliably get 11s on most of your army. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily, you know, that's not a list I would necessarily like worry too much about an infantry machine situation anyway. So it's hard to say, but I do like, I like more, you know, command 10 commanders being out there in general. I think it's something that, some factions need desperately, cause they, in addition to having trouble with getting jammed by swarms of dudes, then they start failing command checks and pretty much the game just toilet bowls on you.
Yeah. I can't remember a lot of games where I failed more than one command check and still won.
Yeah. I mean, it really, it can get away from you quick.
Yeah, I would, definitely agree with Keith that the penalty for failing a command check is unbalanced with the rest of the game. It's one roll that can decide the entire game.
Well, I'll put it in a succinct nutshell. One of the only mechanics that War Machine shares with Warhammer Fantasy and 40K is the way the command checks work, and it's by far the worst mechanic in the game. It is having a single stat based on a 2d6 probability roll is dumb, because it means plus one command is an incredible swing, way more than it sounds like it should be. So then you end up with a situation where you have just a tight band of command from, you know, 7 to 10, and 7's garbage and 10's amazing, or, you know, 11 in certain cases. So yeah, I agree. I think it should be out of the game, but, you know, maybe Mark 3. In the meantime, we got to deal with it though, and that's something to think about when you're playing a swarm. So, but, you know, just to wrap it up, I mean, I think we kind of got general for the most part. But to wrap up the sort of anti-infantry machine, it's have answers to tough, have answers to command checks, create command checks if you can, have control elements to slow or remove units, your opponent's units from the game for a turn if possible, have a multitude of attacks automatically hitting if preferable, and don't let them go first. Am I missing anything as far as the points?
In the control aspects, I would also put down things like Scather templates, cover fire.
Yes.
Things that make models take auto damage.
Yeah, or even just
a big deal.
Just makes them not move the way they want to move. You know, like make them take a curved run as opposed to a straight run at you to jam you is a big deal. I mean, covering fire is one of the things that has, you know, I don't say fixed Signar, but really helped Signar deal with jam better. Between that, Black 13th, Mage Storms, etc. Circle does that very well with laying down templates and making you deal with them as well. I mean, it's just a good board control element that is starting to, it seems to be like appearing more, like players are using it more, and it's also just starting to like more models are getting those sorts of board control. As we get more books.
Anything that can force an infantry model to move in an indirect line is extremely powerful.
Yep. Cool. Well, I think, conceptually, I like what we got out. I don't think we got necessarily too specific as far as factions, but I think
you'll be happy to know, Brib. Let me interrupt you for a second.
All right.
Turbo just came down, picked up an old Rowdy, did a jack-off motion, and then put it back on the shelf and left.
Oh, man. God, I love Turbo. Fuck. Tell him he got a shout-out for trolling me hard on the podcast.
You know, he listens to the podcast, so he'll hear
what
it.
What a nice guy.
He supports us.
I appreciate him. I appreciate him so much and his jerking off old Rowdy.
Jerked off old Rowdy, or he jerked
He picked
off
up old Rowdy and more like jerked off on old Rowdy.
Nice.
Oh, very nice. Very
class,
nice.
Classy moves, Turbo. So to get back to the point I think I was trying to make, I think we covered the concepts. I think it's up to you to open up your books and find those.
Yeah, figure out what control elements you have. Figure out what elements in your specific faction that you play can force your opponent to not play the way they want to.
Yep. You've got I think infantry swarms tend to, when you first play against them and you're not super familiar against them, they tend to dictate your – they're super aggressive and your opponent barely has to think and you have to think a ton. And you need to flip the tables on them as much as you can. And hopefully the elements we talked about kind of cover some of that, and that maybe that'll help some players out. You know, I think it was a good general sweep of the concepts you need to deal with that stuff.
Absolutely. And one thing we didn't touch on, but I will say is more of an in-game thing, not a list-building thing. is good model placement can win you a game against an infantry swarm, and bad model placement will lose you a game, period.
It goes back to not giving anything away. You cannot give stuff away, and bad model placement is how you give stuff away in this game.
Right.
You know, not screening models perfectly, stuff like that. I mean, we can do a whole podcast about that, to be honest with you, but really pay attention to your placement and take advantage of the control elements you do have, whatever they may be, whether they're walls, whether they're templates, et cetera. So, but yeah, I mean, I think on that note, we could probably wrap it up. I don't think we've got time today to do what we're working on.
No, I think we cranked a lot and we're probably at a good jumping off point.
Yeah, for sure. So, Danny, thanks for coming on, man. You educated us about Mercs and we educated you a little bit about life.
Well, you know, that's why I'm here.
Yeah, it was fun, man. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And, you know, I hope we added to your internet infamy a little bit today. You know, that's an important...
Hey, fuck you. I'm famous. I don't have to deal with this shit.
That's what
you're famous
that's
now.
That's what I'm saying. You're famous, bro. Famous.
Fucking famous.
So famous.
All right. Full credits.
Roll 'em.
Warmans.
Next time on Warmans.
Well, Scorn can't deal with dirty, dirty, dirty.